The Guardian.
Welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian, your weekly digest of news from the world of digital, tech, and gaming. This week on the show,
I'm Charles Arthur, and with Juliet Garside, we'll be discussing the forthcoming 4G auction.
And
I'm Jemima Kish, and this week I'll be talking to Mike Bracken. He's the Executive Director of Digital in the Cabinet Office, and he'll be telling me about the work they'll be showcasing in their Sprint 13 event this week.
This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian.
I'm Charles Arthur, and I'm here with Juliet Garside, our telecoms correspondent, to talk about the 4G auction. Juliet, what is 4G for people who don't know, and why does it have to be auctioned off?
Effectively, what they're selling is airspace, and it's the airspace that you use to broadcast wireless signals. And we're talking here about fourth generation mobile wireless signals. That's what 4G stands for. And what it gives you is very fast mobile internet, faster, they claim, than 3G. And it certainly adds to the amount of airspace that we have to send internet traffic over the airwaves to mobile phones.
So at the moment, 3G has about 120 megahertz in bandwidth available to it, around about the sort of 1800, 1900 megahertz frequency. And how much is going to be auctioned off here, and at what frequencies, roughly?
Another 251 megahertz is going into the 4G sale, so that's going to treble the amount available to carry internet signals. Not all 4G frequencies are as valuable as each other. So what we have is some very valuable 800, low frequency 800 megahertz spectrum going into the auction.
Why is it more valuable?
It's more valuable because it travels further distances. So you don't need as many masts to build a national network. It's better if you're trying to get outside towns and cities. And it also goes through walls. And the other bit, there's a larger portion of 2600 spectrum being auctioned. That's all right for cities. It might be used for quite local networks.
But the 2600 megahertz signal doesn't propagate through walls as well.
Yes.
And it's more specific. It's more sort of line of sight almost.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And there's very different amounts of frequency being sold. How many lots are there being sold at the 800 megahertz space? If this is, presumably this is more valuable to the mobile carriers, because there's a lot of different bidders. BT, through one of its subsidiaries, is bidding in this 4G auction, but BT doesn't have a mobile network. And there's also one called MTL, which also doesn't have a mobile network. So Which end of the spectrum will the mobile networks be going for, and which end will BT and MTL be going for?
So the four mobile network companies in the UK, Vodafone, O2, Everything Everywhere, and Three, they'll all be going for the 800 spectrum. And they want this because it's the best for building a national 4G network that covers the whole geography and goes into the villages as well as the towns and cities. And then you'll have companies like BT and another company which has a Hong Kong owner, which is currently running a 4G service, a limited 4G service on the South Bank in London, going for the 2600. And we think BT wants this higher frequency, cheaper spectrum to help with its rural broadband rollout, because once the cables get to more remote areas, it might be cheaper to send the signal, the internet signal, to people's homes, not their mobiles, to people's homes wirelessly, rather than having to lay a whole new bunch of copper or fibre optic.
So it's a sort of a mobile broadband, except to fixed points.
To fixed points, to people's homes.
So this is all going to be sold off, this auction. And the method of the auction sounds rather different from normal auctions. It's a combinatorial clock auction.
It's horrendously complicated. And it takes computers with massive processing powers running algorithms to work out the final winners. And so the combinatorial bit refers to the fact that you don't bid for individual lots, you bid for packages of lots. And it's been used for selling timber, for selling estate, for selling land. And it was also used in the mid-90s to privatise the London buses. When the operators were bidding, they didn't necessarily want to bid for individual routes because of economies of scale. They wanted to bid for bundles of routes. But not every bidder wanted the same kind of bundles. So what the combinatorial auction allowed was for bidders to design their own bundles and bid on them, and bid on a whole different combination of bundles, all with theoretically binding bids. But the auctioneer chooses the final selection of winners from those many different bids. So in this auction, we've been told there's a potential 3,000 different bids that could happen. But from those, only a certain number will be chosen, a small number in the tens.
And the 3G auction back in 2000 raised £22.5 billion, which one thinks makes the Labour government rather made the Labour government then very happy. How much is this one expected to raise, and will there be any knock-on effects?
This auction won't raise nearly as much. The reserve price is £1.3 billion. The 3G auction didn't bankrupt the mobile networks, but it severely impeded their ability to invest in masts and build out 3G so that we could get it in all the geographies of the UK. And I think the government's quite aware of not wanting to do that this time. And also it can't. They just don't have the money. So it's budgeting for £3.5 billion as a taking from the auction, which is quite generous, some people think. It may come out as less. But what it will get going forward, and this is still kind of to be negotiated, but it could get as much as £700 million a year in licence fees for spectrum that the companies already own, that they're already renting.
That's £700 million extra, is it?
Above
the money it gets from the auction.
Yeah, and so the auction's for the 4G spectrum, but then the price is set at that auction. We'll set the price for the spectrum that the companies already rent from the government.
It's raising the rent on the 3G.
It's raising on the 2G.
On the 2G.
The 3G is all paid for. But yes, it's raising the rent on the 2G. And how much the government takes, and therefore we the taxpayer earn from those rental fees, will affect how much companies can afford to spend on building out 4G, obviously.
And, of course, the next thing is, I mean, we're talking about it as if it's a bit theoretical, but obviously it's no use if you don't have a handset. So 4G handsets have been talked about in the US a lot, and Everything Everywhere, which has begun offering some 4G services on its own 1800, 1900 megahertz spectrum, has been selling the iPhone 5, Samsung Galaxy S3, and the Nokia Lumia 920 as 4G capable on its network. Will any handset that says 4G that we buy in the shops or that we already own, will any of those work on these 4G services?
Not necessarily if you bought them outside the UK, because different countries will be using different bands of spectrum to run 4G on. And also within the UK, different networks will be using different bands of spectrum. So although Vodafone and O2 own a bit of 1800 spectrum, which is the band that EE uses right now for its 4G, they don't run 4G on it now, and we don't know if they're going to in the future.
So is there a possibility that we might find that some handsets become more tied to a carrier because it will work on, you know, so the Lumia 920 that you buy with Everything Everywhere for their 4G service, if you went then to Vodafone, might it be that it wouldn't work with that 4G service?
Yeah, and it's a really interesting point, and I think that may be the case for some time.
And, of course, even if it doesn't work, I suppose there's the possibility, though, that you'll still have the other high-speed services. You've got 3G. There's also HSPA, dual-channel HSPA, HSPA Plus, which are pretty fast in their own right.
Yes, they are. And, in fact, the average speed you'll get from the latest version of 3G is pretty much equivalent to the average speed you'll get from the latest version of 4G. 4G might run faster right now for you on EE's network because it's quite empty. There aren't that many customers using it. And often speed is not necessarily affected by the generation of wireless that you're using, but it could be your handset, whether it's got the most modern antenna in it, the fastest processor, whether your network's very busy, what time of day you're using it, how close are you to a mast.
Everything Everywhere surprised people, I think, by the fact that, A, the prices they're charging for their 4G services really look quite high, and also that they weren't offering unlimited data. In fact, they were sort of keeping to 500 megabyte caps on a lot of the contracts. And indeed, the trend across the industry among the mobile carriers has been that 500 megabytes is pretty much a standard sort of cap, apart from 3, which has more bandwidth at 3G. Mm. Do we think that there'll be more data available, you know, given that they'll have this much more bandwidth?
Yes, EE launched when they had the market to themselves just before Christmas, and so there's been no competition, so I guess they could set tight caps. But from May, June, when the other three networks launched their 4G services, obviously there'll be competition, and I guess operators will be looking for ways to stand out from the crowd, and one of those ways surely must be unlimited data.
So we might expect what the data caps will start to come off, and possibly that the pricing will come down.
They'll certainly rise. Is anyone going to do unlimited, like three on cheaper price caps? We don't know. I mean, you could have a £50 a month contract, for example. You could picture a network offering their highest tariff, a £50 a month contract with unlimited data, as a first step.
It's quite a big thing, isn't it? I mean, it's a big thing to imagine. But those are big prices as well. I mean, yeah. If we look at the mobile landscape generally, I mean, across Europe, things have been a bit down. It's been a bit slower. The numbers from the analysts suggest that there's not so much appetite for people buying phones. Do you feel that 4G is coming at the right time? Is it going to give the market a kick? Or
I think there's actually real pent-up demand from people to be able to use their phones like computers and to do everything that you can do on a desktop in the palm of your hand. Well, we may not all be able to afford to. A lot of us do it already on Wi-Fi, and that feels free to many people, particularly if it's their company's Wi-Fi, or if you're already paying for broadband at home. So people may be after a handset rather than a contract when they're buying a 4G phone. But if you're going to splash out on an iPhone, you might want the best network possible.
Juliet Garside, thank you very much.
And now for our Tech Weekly News Roundup with Jason Phipps.
This is the latest from the best technology news site on the web, guardian.co.uk/technology. This week saw a tragic death in the tech community. Aaron Swartz was a tech innovator and tireless campaigner for open access to publicly funded information online. The 26-year-old was found dead in his New York apartment, having apparently taken his own life. The tragedy of his death was marked publicly by such noted figures as Tim Berners-Lee and Cory Doctorow, who celebrated Aaron's great achievements at such a young age, which included his work on the RSS 1.0 web feed specification, his work on Creative Commons, and his key involvement in the creation of Reddit.com. His death was not without controversy, as Swartz was caught up in a prosecution for allegedly hacking into the MIT computer system and releasing millions of research documents. Aaron's parents said this week that the public prosecutor and MIT were complicit in his death, but this was vociferously denied by the US Attorney's Office. MIT President L. Raphael Reif publicly announced an investigation into the institution's involvement in the prosecution of Swartz, stating that it pains me to think that MIT played any role in the series of events that have ended in tragedy. The Facebook versus Google battle intensified this week with the launch of Facebook's expansion into the online search market.
Graph search is going to be another pillar that's like that.
So there's really simple
Mark Zuckerberg there explaining Facebook's graph search, which he claimed this week will change how people use the social network. The service, that has a limited beta rollout, is exclusively focused on the Facebook ecosystem, but analysts believe it could expand and take on the might of Google. The markets, however, tempered the Facebook founder's exuberance. Shortly after the announcement, Facebook's share price dipped 1.5% to $30.46. Oracle has issued an emergency fix for its Java software, which security experts said is being exploited to carry out identity theft and other crimes. But flaws remain which can be exploited, researchers say. The fix, available from the Oracle website, is intended to block a weakness in Java when running in web browsers, which the US Department of Homeland Security said was being actively exploited. The new fix from Oracle sets the default Java security settings to high, so users are prompted before their systems will run Java applets from an unknown source or potential hacker. And finally, the Christmas tablet boom is very happy news for the newspaper industry, according to a survey by YouGov for Networks, the UK newspaper industry marketing body. According to the survey, 18 to 24-year-olds were the most likely age group to download an app from one of the UK national newspapers, and fingers crossed, it's the Guardian app that they're downloading. So to all you young readers out there, to read these stories in full and for the latest tech news, day and night, go to guardian.co.uk/technology. Coming up next, The Guardian's Jemima Kish speaks to Mike Bracken, the Executive Director of Digital in the Cabinet Office, about his work and the Sprint 13 workshop, which is showcasing the best digital practice across government in the UK. But first, if you like the Tech Weekly podcast, why not download our free Guardian Audio Edition?
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, Mali, high stakes in Hollande's war, Johnny Marr goes solo, and our audiobook review looks at Christopher Priest's The Islanders and Daniel Defoe's classic Robinson Crusoe. To subscribe for free, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian or find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
And now for the latest on all things digital with Jemima Kish.
Hi, I'm Jemima Kish, and this week I'm talking to Mike Bracken. He's the Executive Director of Digital in the Cabinet Office, best known for building the Government Digital Service. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jemima. How are you doing?
Very good. So can you just give us an overview of what the Government Digital Service, what it is and what it has achieved so far, and what your average punter in the street would see of GDS?
OK. The Government Digital Service is the central part of the government's digital estate. So in a federated system of government like ours, we brought all the digital bits together to create a central government estate. And we set it up in the middle of 2011. It took 6 months to pull all the bits of government together. And Francis Moore, the Minister of the Cabinet Office, launched the Government Digital Service in December 2011. And it's the mission of the Government Digital Service is to make great digital public services so good that people want to use them, to make things simpler, clearer, and faster. The public right now, I think, would mostly be aware of the Government Digital Service because of GovUK. This is our biggest launch. We launched in October. We launched a platform for government that replaced DirectGov, which was the consumer portal, and BusinessLink. And we've done those with a small team here and working with our digital colleagues across government. And we've saved a lot of money. We've made it better for the consumer. As I say, it's clearer for everybody, and it's a lot faster. And we continue to develop that. Today we've got about 11 agencies on there, and we've got, I think, six major departments of the major government departments on that platform. We will continue to roll most of the government's digital assets onto that platform until to make the user experience consistent for everyone who deals with the government, whether they are a user, a citizen, or a business.
So how much money have you saved?
Well, just in terms of replacement BusinessLink and DirectGov, we've saved £55 million on a direct replacement cost for those entities, and that's substantial. But that's nothing in terms of what we are saving and continue to save in terms of IT. My colleague Liam Maxwell is a CTO for government and works within GDS. He and his team have saved over £400 million in IT savings, and we're collectively part of the ERG in Cabinet Office. And the ERG is an efficiency and reform group, and in the last year we saved £5.5 billion of government money for the taxpayer by making many, many of these changes. But really, I'm very proud of those savings, and we've done those very quickly. Remember that we only came into existence properly in December 2011. But nonetheless, the real profound savings in front of us are those that will come by transforming our transactions, but we don't have those full numbers yet.
You've also been cherry-picking some of the best developers in London, including from The Guardian, where, Mike, you used to work. Will you be showing off these developers and the work you've been doing at Sprint 13?
We will. I'm glad you asked that. We will be showing those developers' work off, but Sprint is more about starting a movement to transform the transactional services within departments and across governments. And we're talking less about GDS and more about some of the great work that's going on in government. If I look across government right now, and I sit right across the government's digital estate, there's some fantastic examples of digital skills, developers being one of them, but digital products and services that are creating a new wave of public services. If I look at DFID and the work they've done on the AIDS platform, it is a sort of government as a platform model. If I look at what DEFRA is doing with the Rural Payments Agency, really embracing Agile and making a new service for all people involved in agriculture and land management. There's also already some great services in places like the Department of Transport and DVLA, and we're improving those services with us. In Ministry of Justice, the Office of the Public Guardian is a great service that we've helped them really transform people who are dealing with one of those gnarly problems about how you transfer assets amongst the family and friends, and at times of great distress. And also services that, if you like, are a bit more mainstream in terms of volume, services like Land Registry. So there's a lot of great stuff going on about government, and we don't often celebrate that, nor do we bring it together. And what Sprint is going to do today is tell that story. All those people are going to come together, show what they've been doing, learn from each other, but crucially commit to the transformation agenda that's implicit and explicit in the government digital strategy. So let's just go back a month. At the end of, just before Christmas, in the third week of December, we published 18 departmental digital strategies. And within those, every department committed to transform digitally at least three major services. And there's some major parts of the government's transactional estate within that, from full reform, continued reform and digitization of the tax system, transformation of motoring services, huge digital transformations of key parts of the justice services, courts, magistrates' courts, and so on and so forth. And I've already mentioned one in terms of DEFRA and the Rural Payments Agency. And these services touch millions of people, and they make a profound difference to the lives of both individuals and businesses in the UK. And what we're doing today is we're bringing them together, we're showing some of the great work that's already happening, and we're also committing to a period of change. And the rest of this Parliament, we've got about 400 days to do this, and we will commit to transforming 25 of our mainstream services. And today really is the start of that inside government. It is a government event, but we are inviting some other people to share in that. And after today, we'll be putting a lot of the stuff and a lot of the content of today online so you can see it. So it's the start of a movement. And if you think 400 days seems a long time, well, let me put that in perspective. I got this job, and GDS exists, because a few years ago, Martha Lane Fox, our digital champion, has been endlessly supportive with us, wrote a report called Digital by Default. And she wrote a series of letters to Francis Moore, the Minister of Cabinet Office, to encourage him to take this view, which he's done. He's been nothing but tremendous in supporting us. And one of the major recommendations was that GDS was created. Now, it took 400 days, roughly, nearly exactly, actually, from the publication of that report to the launch of GovUK. So we're confident that from, if you like, being an internal startup in government to launching the cross-government platform took 400 days. We're confident in the next 400 days that across government we can transform our major transactional services.
It's very difficult to do transformation without disrupting things, though. How much of your job is building a consensus and educating and explaining to the civil service what you're trying to do?
It's all my job. It's everything I do is about educating people, is about helping them, sometimes about supporting them a lot of the time. We've had a good run with GDS and GovUK, but we've really got to take that message now right across government. And of course, you have to transform stuff, and of course, we have to disrupt stuff. But I think we're at that point now, Jemima, that we've not had before, where there's a confluence of factors, and it means that there's a willingness to embrace. I think people have seen the success that we've had here. They've seen the record of delivery. We've delivered, I've mentioned GovUK, but we've delivered many major services transformations. And there's a degree of confidence now that we can do this, and we're quite good at this at the heart of government. Also, we have to be frank, in an era where finances are constrained, we recognise that many of our services are currently done in an old IT model, which is usually can be very expensive. So there's a willingness to get the savings that will come from that. But crucially, and the thing that drives us all, is user need. We recognise right now, both in government and outside, that users could get better services. In our digital lives, whether it's buying a book or an airplane ticket or reading The Guardian, that we're getting better user experiences than we are in our government services. And people in government recognise that. So I think those factors make my job easier. It's not easy by any means, but we do have to recognise that we have a number of factors that allow people to disrupt their existing services, more so than probably existed, I don't know, 5-10 years ago.
So if you haven't already been to the Government Digital Service, do go to GDS, take a look, and then tell them what you think. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Jemima.
To read more from Jemima Kish, go to guardian.co.uk/technology. That's it for this edition of Tech Weekly from The Guardian.
Tech Weekly was produced by me, Jason Phipps, and included reports by Charles Arthur and Jemima Kish. The music on this podcast is by Christer Moberg, aka DJ Chris, from Sweden. And you can hear that track in full on his SoundCloud page. That's SoundCloud/Electrowed. There'll be a link on our blog at guardian.co.uk/techweekly.
We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.